Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of the sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the Easter good, well, so-so Friday edition of the Horn. Welcome also to the Earth Day edition of the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Horn. This is conversation radio. This is radio like nothing else going anywhere else. Not that it's better, not that it's worse. It's just different. It is the Friday before Easter, and it is also Earth Day. Those things ever coincide before? I don't know. But it leads to an interesting nexus of conversation, I do believe. I'm reminded it was Ron and Raleigh who wrote a few nights ago when I was inquiring as to where we got the hang up with rabbits and eggs. I believe it was Ron and Raleigh who said, as is the case with most of the stuff in the Bible, that too is a mistranslation. At the time when at the time of Passover, when he was stood before the crowd, a choice was given. The people that were assembled beneath the parapet or whatever. And he said, we can free Jesus or we can free Barabbas. There was no such thing as a public address system back then, there being no electricity. And the crowd misheard and screamed back, give us the rabbit. Give us the rabbit. And consequently, rabbits enter the iconography of Easter. Then again, got an email earlier today from our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. He writes, this is why I find it necessary to do fun and wacky things that just happen to piss off fundies. This email shows how flawed the logic of the fundies is. This does not say anything about religion in general, just the Christian faith and fundies in particular. Considering the Bible itself cannot even speak with a unified voice about something that would have been well documented if it was true, my wildly off-target explanation is as good as anyone's to the events spoken of below. I'd like to review the history of this holiday just so we can compare it to modern-day beliefs. Easter is about eggs, rabbits, and in modern times, zombies. Why eggs and bunnies? Because this was the pagan holiday of fertility. The Christians co-opted this day for their zombie holiday and liked the eggs and bunny so much they stole those too. The reason we hide eggs is because there are very few pagans left to do it for us. After ancient Rome converted to Christianity en masse, the good little Christian children would be sent out to hunt for pagan eggs in their neighbors' yards and stuff. If the kids found any eggs, those neighbors would be subjected to all the wonders of Christian charity, including drowning, burning, and good old-fashioned torture before death. Happy Easter, everybody. And attached to the email was a blast from Tony Perkins's Norman Washington update. He is risen indeed. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? And I guess it's a sad commentary on the way pop culture works, but I can never see that phrase, O death, where is thy sting, without, in my mind, the loop replaying of W.C. Fields upon being told that the man had drowned in a vat of whiskey. Oh, death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? So, as I said, it's Earth Day. It's Good Friday. But this is truly a harmonic convergence, because we have a trinity of things to celebrate today. It's Agnes's birthday. Everybody say happy birthday, Agnes.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. Happy Earth Day.
Agnes will be filling in as the role of the Earth Mother during this celebration.
No, the Easter Bunny came and took my eggs and baskets. I don't have those anymore, Bob.
Well, we weren't going to get into that level of detail, dear, but... Oh, well. So, with all of that in mind, let's just sort of get things started in the right spirit of things, if you will.
Yeah, we're all family here.
Every sacred holiday needs a prophet, and I can think of none other better than the prophet, peace be upon him, Bill Hicks.
I was over in Australia during Easter, which was interesting. Interesting to note, they celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're fucked up as a race. Anybody got any clues out there? Or where do you get this shit from, you know? Why those two things, you know? Why not goldfish left Lincoln logs in your sock drawer, you know? As long as we're making shit up, go hog wild, you know? At least a goldfish with a Lincoln log on its back going across your floor to your sock drawer has a miraculous connotation to it. Mummy, I woke up today and there was a Lincoln log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus. Who comes up with this shit? I've read the Bible. I can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in that fucking book.
Smiling from the moist kiss on
positively triumphant, isn't it? XTC and Easter Theater. Andy Partridge being one of the most, brilliant of all among rock and roll lyricists, and everybody knows him. I'm a real pushover for smart... for smart lyrics. I guess it's got to be a holy quadrinity of holidays because it's also Passover. But it's spring. Gloriously, it is spring. And to prove it, we have a thunderstorm rolling through the area here. So we may lose bandwidth, power, any number of things at any point in the program, and it all just goes to hell. Because it's spring. But, and there's real news to go into this evening. But I can't help but stop and reflect that peoples from time immemorial have been absolutely amazed that winter ended and that things do start getting reborn. The trees get green, the flowers bloom, the bees buzz, the birds sing. And we wanted to manifest some sort of human reflection of that in our own lives. Sometimes we did it in rather misguided fashion. You may have noticed the line in the XTC song, "Now the son is dead, the father can be reborn." We did that too. Fisher King? Anyone? Although that may have happened in the autumn, I'm not sure. But I know that the ancient Mexica had a corn festival in the spring, called the Dear One Flayed, in which a virgin, don't ask me, everybody has this hang up with virgins, in which a virgin the smallest of the temple priests, the virgin would be taken into the temple precincts for about a month prior to the actual festival itself, at which point they would be given absolute license to have sex with anyone they wanted to, because procreation is the story of spring. And when the actual festival came, the virgin, who wasn't a virgin anymore by any stretch of the imagination, was drugged and had the skin flayed alive from its body. And the smallest of the priests would put on the skin and take the thigh bone of the sacrificial victim and bless the sick with it. It was called the blessing by the bone. Blessed with the bone. People who were sick, who had deformities, who were unable to walk, what have you, would be blessed with the bone. Oh, but, you know, that was paganism, right? Well, because the iconography of drinking blood and eating live human meat, well, that's ever so civilized, isn't it? Springtime would see the arrival in the temples of Ishtar, Astarte, Mother Goddess, whatever, of the temple prostitutes. Self-respecting, upstanding women from all over the countryside entering the temple to give it up for the goddess. And just, you know, taking all... Well, no, I'm not going to use that phrase. When you look at it, we're kind of sad and pitiful as human beings, aren't we? We want so badly to feel connected with our natural world. We know that that connection was broken a long time ago. In fact, you can make the argument that the story of Cain and Abel is about the breaking of that connection to the natural world and the rise of the agricultural society and things like that. That would bore you half out of your mind if I went on at much length about it. But it's all there. Somewhere deep in the human psyche, we know that we are disconnected from nature. We know that we are doing things that are wrong to nature. And by nature, I mean the ability of our species to continue to exist upon the planet. The last year, the whole last year, from the Upper Big Branch disaster to the BP disaster to Fukushima, is just a love tap from nature, whom we like to think of as a mother. Just a little love tap saying, folks, you've tested my patience. And sure, why not mother? Because isn't it the way of a mother that the first thing you get when you're a little child is, honey, don't do that. And usually mamas are good for three or four don't do that's. And then you get a swat on the bottom. No, mama told you not to do that. And children who insist on not learning, and that would be in large part a description of the human race, children who insist on not learning cry, dry their tears, and then go back to doing what mama told them not to do in the first place. And eventually, even the most loving of mothers reaches the end of her patience, and she begins to royally thrash the recalcitrant child. I'll leave it up to you to decide whether or not Upper Big Branch, the BP disaster, and Fukushima are that first little spanking, or are the beginnings of the thrashing. I have told you and told you and told you not to do that. That moment when a parent will become frustrated and say, I swear sometimes I think your ears are in your butt, because that's the only way I can get through to you. Is that what we're dealing with? And if that's the case, does anyone have the nerve to ask what the next one is? Because I don't. I'd rather listen. I'd rather pay attention. And the thing is, for the most part, it's not you and it's not me who are doing this. It's being done in our name. Because we all like the electricity to come on when we flip the switch. I guess we all like to have plastic bottles full of gobblolly and grapes from Chile and lobsters flown to Las Vegas. I guess we like all of that. So they do it in our name. And our motives are simple. We like to eat. We like to not sit in the dark. It's taken us about 100 years to just about suck the planet dry. You know, this is the hydrocarbon age. The Middle Ages are said to have been the age of wood. That's when Europe was deforested. It took the Europeans who landed on the North American continent less than 200 years to deforest North America. They weren't quite as successful with South America, but undaunted, they continue. And it leaves the question of what's next. Indeed, what is next? Lots of stuff out there. Anybody got a Terry? Has there been a Terry Jones sighting today? Well, I know what happened last night. And I know what was happened. I know that he was denied a permit to protest outside the Islamic Center of America today. I know he faced arrest if he went through with his so-called demonstration. He said he intended to do it anyway. Said he was going to bring his gun, his shooting yarn. That's where it got weird. Fox affiliate in Michigan interviewed Terry Jones last night. And at about 11:10 p.m., after the interview in the TV studio, he was getting into the passenger side of his car. No word on who was driving or whether he was drinking. Getting into his car when the gun went off. They say it was a .40 caliber handgun that fired accidentally. Now, there are .40 caliber revolvers out there. But looking at Terry Jones, he looks like a Glock man to me. How about you? And, you know, Glocks don't have a safety. There's a little internal trigger and then the trigger, and if they both get pulled backwards, gun go boom. Which means that dumbass had one chambered, round chambered for easy access. It's not enough just to have 17 rounds of ammunition in the clip. He had to pop the slide and be ready to go against the Sharia Islamists and the radicals in case things get out of hand. That's what he said. He was going to have a gun in Michigan in case things get out of hand. Do you feel lucky in the name of Jesus? Do you feel lucky? Well, do you? Punk. Bang! And he shoots himself in the floorboard. Now, he didn't shoot himself. He shot the floorboard of his car. Officers heard a gunshot, approached the vehicle, and asked Mr. Jones if he was okay, Southfield Police Lieutenant Nick Luizia said. He was, and they also observed he had a gun in his hand. Lucia said both Jones and his driver were carrying carrying valid Florida concealed weapon licenses, and officers determined a crime had not been committed. Oh, for God's sakes. So now, am I to understand, wait a minute! Am I to understand that it is the position of law enforcement in the state of Michigan that the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution applies to concealed carry handgun permits? And yet that self-same full faith and credit clause of the Constitution does not extend to people who love each other and happen to get married in a place that allows same-sex marriage? Yes, because they didn't arrest him for carrying a concealed weapon in the state of Michigan without a Michigan concealed weapon permit. Makes it a little difficult sometimes, hanging on to that sanity thing. Yeah. Question for the, where was it again? Southfield Police, Southfield, Michigan Police. Would they recognize? Does this say that the Southfield, Michigan Police would recognize a gay couple who were legally and lawfully married in the state of Vermont? Or New Hampshire? Or Massachusetts? Because I'm betting the answer's no. Hey. Yeah, David in Tennessee had the same thought I did. No doubt, another pleased Glock owner heard from. Asking also, no crime? Bullshit! Ain't a city in the U.S. without an unlawful discharge law on the books. None. Jones got a free one on that deal. Should have been locked up. Unlawful discharge, shooting within 500 feet of a dwelling, 300 feet some places, some, you know, that kind of thing. Could have locked him up, and this whole thing today, to the extent of whatever the hell it was, could have gone by the boards. Wouldn't that have been nice? Yes, as a matter of fact, it would have. So it's about 27 minutes past the hour. This is, by the way, Friday on the Front Porch, the Friday on the Front Porch edition of the Horn. Tomorrow, apropos of nothing, because this is a global audience, and hey, anybody want to... but tomorrow, Agnes, the kids, and I will be going over to beautiful downtown Fayetteville, West Virginia, to help out with displays and conversations and so forth at Coal River Mountain Watch's table for the Earth Day celebration in Fayetteville. And then just a gentle programming reminder, if I may please, Monday evening, 7 p.m. Now, I've mentioned this two nights in a row. I don't want to see anybody in the chat room going, "Where's Bob?" Monday evening, 7 p.m. Another in the ongoing series of American History graduate level chats hosted by Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly. The Horn will carry it live beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific, and God knows what, wherever else you may be. 214-2693, the Universal Galactic Time. Okay, I made that part up. 7 Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And these are important. These are meaningful. It's a chance to sort of get a little dose of graduate school education as you go. For free, I might add. Update in via Texas Betsy, 23 minutes ago. Michigan jury waives ban on protest outside mosque. A Michigan jury on Friday considered whether police acted properly by denying a permit to a controversial Florida pastor, this via Reuters, who had planned to protest outside the largest U.S. mosque during its prayers. 5 hours of testimony and argument went on today before they adjourned to consider a verdict. The Wayne County assistant prosecutor's name is Robert Moran. How unfortunate. But he did argue for our side, saying that Dearborn city officials were justified in denying a permit to Terry Jones because of concerns that his appearance could become a public safety nightmare. Jones represented himself in court on Friday, arguing that his free speech rights had been violated. I'm not going over that ground again. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. And he is an evil, machinating bastard for even suggesting it. Jones, who represented himself and thereby had a fool for a lawyer and an idiot for a client, argued, "The First Amendment is only valid if it allows us to say what other people may not like. Otherwise, we do not need the First Amendment." And God bless him, guess who was standing right there by his side defending him? Yeah. The American Civil Liberties Union. The same people who kept Flush Flimball's the globulent, jiggleless butt out of prison. The ACLU agreed, saying police had overstepped trying to force Jones to post a peace bond that could hold him financially responsible for police protection. Rana Elmire, oh no, a spokeswoman for the ACLU said,
"It is unconstitutional to put a price on free speech in anticipation that the speech may not be welcomed by others." God damn it!
This is not about Terry Jones's free speech. This is about Terry Jones inciting an effing riot. This is about little children not being able to go to school. This is about adults not being able to worship as they choose, because an armed madman is outside their house of worship where they go to talk to their invisible friend. And I support wholeheartedly the right of Americans everywhere to commune with their invisible friend any way that their invisible friend commands them to commune. I merely insist upon the right not to commune with their invisible friend if I don't want to. And whoever that bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky is that are worshipped by the three monotheistic religions, Yahweh, Allah, God, Dieu, Dio, Ronnie James Dio, should we have a bumper? I don't want nothing to do with him. I'll take the lady with the eggs hanging all over her belly. Or the elephant god from India. He seems a friendly sort. But that big juvenile delinquent, I'll take a pass on. Six of one, half a dozen of another. Right? Right. So anyway, there's the update. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you very kindly. No actual news in the story. You could have told me that to begin with. But I do appreciate it. No, that's news. They had a little trial today, which meant that he wasn't outside the mosque. But that means he'll just stay the weekend and maybe shoot his car some more and do it Monday. Anybody getting updates, I would be interested in seeing what... seeing what transpired. So there we have it. The beginning of this Friday on the Front Porch. Jump right in. The conversation is fine. Listen, it works much better if you load up the lines early instead of everybody trying to get in the last 15 minutes of the program. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. A reminder, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday evening, live American History Chat via the Prism West Virginia series featuring our dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly, also a very good friend of the Horn, and available both on the Horn Ustream channel and the Horn regular audio channel. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn. 21 minutes before the hour, this is the horn, and breaking news via the chat room, via our good friend Sparky. The jury in Dearborn, Michigan. The jury in Dearborn, Michigan has denied Terry Jones' attempt to protest outside the Islamic Center of America in Dearborn. I hope that means that they told him to go the hell home and take his gun with him. The gun business sparking a little bit, at least a little bit of a question. Tim from L.A., who is making an appearance in the chat room this evening. Hi, Tim! Why does Terry Jones need a gun? Wouldn't Jeebus protect Terry from his enemies? Don't Jones know the Bible verse, Matthew 8:26? He replied, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. Maybe there is no sky spook to protect him, and Jones knows it, but he wants the tax-free dollars. Glory, hallelujah, praise me some mammon. And David in Tennessee also noting, sorry about backtracking, but remove Terry Jones. Remove Terry Jones from that whole tableau. Replace him with a bearded non-white man. Now then, replay accidental discharge of a firearm tape. Anybody care to take the over-under on the non-white man going down and going down hard at, oh, hell yes? Ron and Raleigh seem to be on the same wavelength with David in Tennessee. Bob, as the late Nate Dogg said in the song Regulate, 16 in the clip and one in the hole, Nate Dogg is about to make some bodies go cold. The Reverend Terry was just embracing his inner gangsta. Whew. You guys are tuned in and plugged up. Let's go to the phones. Oh! Dang it. We have a patience problem. We do. We have a patience problem. It being, I don't necessarily know what you read at Passover. I'll leave that to Betsy. Maybe she can suggest something. But I thought we would read, just for the fun of it, the oldest gospel is the Gospel of St. Mark. Saint being, well, subjective to say the least. Mark 15:39 says, "And when the centurion, which stood over against him, saw that he cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, 'Truly this man was the Son of God.'" There's a great story out of Hollywood. Many of you may have seen that awful, awful old, with a cast of stars, chestnut, The Greatest Story Ever Told, in which John Wayne, no really, plays the centurion. There's the story about the fact, and that was his only line in the whole movie. "Truly this man was the Son of God." And there's the old story that during the shooting of the film, the Duke, and foot across scene, John Wayne, and action! "Truly this man was the Son of God." Cut! Duke, that's just, I don't know. This is a really, really moving moment. I don't think you're capturing the spirit of it, Duke. Centurion scene, take two, action! "Truly this man was the Son of God." Cut! Duke, I just don't think we're getting it. Yeah, it's just not coming across. I mean, this is what ties everything together. This is the moment, Duke. What we need here, Duke, is a little bit of, I don't know, what we need, Duke, is some awe. Centurion, foot of the cross scene, take three, action! "Ah, truly this man was the Son of God." Cut! Print it! There were also women looking on afar off because, you know, the misogyny that was that just ran like a mighty sewer through that culture wouldn't even let the women get close to grieve those that were being murdered that particular day, among whom was Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James the Less, and of Joses and Salome, who also, when he was in Galilee, followed him and ministered unto him, and many other women which came up with him into Jerusalem. Now, the truth in that statement is that, in fact, for all of human history, recorded and it is the women of the world who have borne the brunt of the horrors that the men have somehow figured out a way to mete out and blame. Oh, I got, our imaginary friend told us to rape all of you. Don't want to get the imaginary friend. It could be worse. How? And you don't want to know. And now when the even was come, because they had not yet invented participials, and now when the even was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, wouldn't that mean it was Thursday? Yeah, right. There's a little calculation going on there that kind of puts Sunday in a bad light for Easter. Because listen up. And now when the even was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate, and craved the body of Jesus. And Pilate marveled if he were already dead, and calling unto him the centurion, he asked him whether he had been any while dead. I think if you were going to redo this, you would kind of have to cast William Shatner as Pilate so that he could look and say, no, not William Shatner. Oh, daggummit, McCoy's dead. Because, yeah, that would have been the perfect casting. Is he dead? No, it would have been Shatner. Is he dead? He's dead, Jim. Yeah, it would have been Shatner. Shatner is Pilate. Is he dead? And Pilate marveled if he were already dead. They did that already? Man, they must have been in a hurry. And calling unto him the centurion, he asked him whether he had been any while dead. Is he stiffened up yet? And when he knew it of the centurion, he's been dead a little while, your eminence, he gave the body to Joseph of Arimathea. And he bought fine linen and took him down and wrapped him in the linen, and we are completely lost in pronouns at this point, and laid him in a sepulcher which was hewn out of a rock, and rolled a stone unto the door of the sepulcher. And Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of Jesus, because this says Jose, beheld where he was laid. Somebody get the King James Bible Authority on this. Does it really say? Anybody got a KJV around? Mary, the mother of Jose's? J-O-S-E-S? I'm assuming that's Yeshua. Beheld where he was laid. And when the Sabbath was passed, the rules for which have not changed much over the millennia, and when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome never gets much press, had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. So this is like sundown. Help me here, Betsy. The day before Shabbat Sabbath is from Thursday sundown to Friday sundown, with the Sabbath starting 20 minutes before sundown on Friday. So that means that, because St. Mark, again, this is the earliest version of the story that's in existence. And when the Sabbath was passed, which I'm assuming from what Betsy tells me would be somewhere around sundown Saturday, Very early in the first in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? Yeah, thank you, Betsy. That would be Saturday night. And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. Now here's the trick. That verse, and I'm not telling you any. These are facts. You can ask anybody who understands the origins of the Gospels, and they will tell you the same thing, unless they're lying. It is a fact that Mark 16:5, and entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. It is a fact that that is where the real book of Mark ends. Everything else was added somewhere around 100 to 250 years later, and there's no getting around it. Now, what comes after that? Mark 16:6 and FF and following. And he saith unto them, be not affrighted, ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him again, as he said unto you. And they went out quickly and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. Now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven devils. Oh, yeah, he cast some devils, all right. You know, Mary Magdalene and all. And she went and told them that had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And they, when they had heard that he was alive and had been seen of her, believed not. And after that, he appeared in another form unto two of them as they walked and went into the country. In another form. In other words, some guy is walking by two disciples who don't look like Jesus. And they went and told it unto the residue, neither believed they them. Yeah, okay, put down the wineskin, guys. Afterward he appeared unto the 11 as they sat at meat and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And he said unto them, go ye unto the all. See, this is one of those places where the guys in Hollywood would tell you the story falls apart. Afterward he appeared unto the 11 as they sat at meat, and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And he said unto them, because this would be the paragraph where all 11 are talking at once. Hey, Lord, how'd you do that one? That's a pretty neat trick, God. Can we see the holes? Oh, that comes later. That's a different book. No. He sits down, and, you know, he's got a history through the Gospels of upbraiding the disciples because they weren't the brightest bulbs in the socket, nor the sharpest knives in the drawer. Which of us is going to sit at your right hand, Lord? You all get a crown, okay? You get a crown. Everybody gets a crown. Clueless. They shouldn't be called the disciples. They should be called the clueless. But no, none of that's recorded. Instead, he kind of monologues like something out of an Ayn Rand novel and says, go ye unto all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils, they shall speak with new tongues, they shall take up serpents. See, that's where the trouble starts. And if they drink any deadly things, think cyanide, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover. And it all ends with Mark 16:19-20. So then, after the Lord had spoken unto them, he was received up into heaven and sat on the right hand of God. Because to sit on the left hand of God would be sinister, because that was the Latin, right. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word with signs of the following. Amen. B.S. Because the whole book ends, and they were affrighted. Everything after that, all of the B.S. about go ye unto all the world and preach to the birds and the beetles, made up. And that's one of the reasons I can't have anything to do with the Christian theology. Because every single pastor, every single preacher who has spent any time at all, you know, and there is an old interview somewhere in the Horn archives with the eminent textual critic Bart Ehrman of the University of North Carolina. He said, when he was explaining about how Mark ends, because that's where I learned it, you know, it doesn't just spring forth from a little noggin. I learned it. Learning, you know, it's going to be big. He explained that everybody who's ever been to any kind of religious schooling where they teach how the Bible came to be the Bible, be you Greek Orthodox, be you Roman Catholic, be you Protestant, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Frisbyterian, what have you, you learn this because this is known data. This is for real. It ends with, and they were affrighted, -30-. The women get scared and leave, which was wise on their part. Everything from that, from affrighted, and they had no punctuation back then, but affrighted, boom, over. Everything else gets added by some bored monk sitting in a cave in the midst of some godforsaken arid wasteland 100, 150, 200 years later, thinking, you know, I hate how that is. You know, that just, it needs help. It needs a little something. I know what. I'm going to turn him into a zombie god. Now, let's see. Let's try him. And thereupon did Jesus suck out their brains. No. Scratch that. Give me a new piece of parchment. And you wind up with Mark 16:6 through Mark 16:20. It's all made up. It's all hogwash. Not a word of truth in it. And everybody except the rubes knows it. And the reason the rubes don't know it is because of all the people who follow the W.C. Fields' three commandments, of all the people who follow it most assiduously and religiously, the religion industry does. Their own book doesn't say anything about a resurrection. It had to be added. It had to be worked in for the sake of St. Paul, who had to have a zombie god to make it work with the theology of the people he was working with, namely Ionian Greeks of Asia Minor and Romans, of which he was a Roman citizen. You get it? And this fraud has been deluding and abusing people for about 1,700 years.
There's no resurrection miracle. It doesn't exist. It never happened. Even the earliest writers of his story make no mention of it. The miracle of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, is that in the midst of a brutal and bloody world, he had the courage to stand up and say, "Stop! Stop! It doesn't have to be this bad. It is bad, but it can be better. We can love each other." I was reading this thing the other day by this guy named Socrates. And he said the highest form of love is to love your enemy. And I think he's right. But all of that part gets left out, and all you get is love thy neighbor as thyself and love your enemy. And that kind of talk was miraculous for its day, especially in one of the most brutal, bloodthirsty, throat-slitting areas of the globe. But we don't have time for that miracle. So, shall we move on from this now into the real news? Let's do. I feel like I've been doing a three-night sermon. Where's the bourbon? I want to get the taste of this out of my mouth. Surely this man was the Son of God, Pilgrim. Fill your hands, you son of a bitch. This is the horn. We'll be back.
I like to think I've earned my reputation for rushing in where angels fear to tread. I'll take you home to meet the congregation. We'll all get together in my tent. I make a dirty little religion out of heaven. I'll make a dirty little convert out of you. I make a dirty little religion out of heaven. I'll make a dirty little convert out of you. Child, and try to keep you nailed to the floor. Join us for the countdown to the rapture. We've never turned a sinner from our door. I'll make a dirty little religion out of loving. I'll make a dirty little convert out of you. I'll make a dirty little religion out of loving. It's a dirty little religion, hallelujah. Dirty little acolyte, dirty little world, learn the fundamental of design. Can I get a witness to my testimony? Can I get amen from the choir? Dirty little religion. Dirty little religion. Dirty little religion. I like to think I've earned my reputation. I try to take the bull by the horns. I'll show you where I get my inspiration. Where we plow and where we plant the corn. I make a dirty little religion out of loving. I'll make a dirty little convert out of you. I make a dirty little religion out of loving. It's a dirty little religion, hallelujah. Dirty little acolyte, dirty little one, during the fundamental of desire. Can I get a witness to my testimony? Can I get an amen from the choir?
cheer up, sire. You know what they say.
What do they say, Patsy?
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. You give it a try. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. Well, life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
Always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death a joke, it's true.
You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go.
Just remember that the last laugh is on you.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We did.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention 24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Global Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Global Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Global Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten minutes past the hour. We're going to get away from it now. But it occurs to me before we do. By the way, that was the Spam-a-lot version of Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. I'd never heard it. I thought it'd be kind of fun. At least that was something in which a guy named Terry Jones had something good to do that didn't involve an attempt to start a race war. Updating, the other evil Terry Jones, the one who shot his car... In the name of Jesus, refused to pay a $1 peace bond. $1. You know, as we noted on a previous program, the Romans had the whole crucifixion thing down pretty well pat by the time they got around to Yeshua. And you look at Terry Jones and you know, where's a good Roman when you need one? But, you know, we talked about Easter bunnies and Easter eggs and all of that foolishness. The late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, kind of nailed it. But do you know why we teach that stuff to children? Really? Do you know why we teach that stuff to children? We teach that stuff to children because we start indoctrinating them at an early age to believe the unbelievable, to abandon reason. In the face of fantasy, we give them things like tooth fairies and Easter bunnies and Santa Claus early in their lives, so later on we can tell them that a guy came back from the dead, and that he's going to stand in judgment of them and throw them into hell because he loves them so much. If they don't believe in him, that's all it is. That's all it is. If you want to believe it, fine. No skin off my nose. Believe that Muhammad rode a flying horse. No skin off my nose. Believe whatever you want to believe. Believe in an elephant god munching those little marshmallow peanuts through all eternity. I don't give a damn. But at least have the common decency to acknowledge that you are engaging in the realm of fantasy and not reality. Dead. Once you're dead, you're dead. You don't get back up. Once the heart gives out and the brain punts, it's over. Putrefaction sets in and the worms get into the business. It's just reality. It doesn't hurt. It's fantasy. It's bunk. It's hokum. The love that Yeshua preached in his life is real. The stuff about the resurrection is a made-up load of crap. God, how I wish that Sean Hannity and William Donahue could hear this this last hour. Because those dumb bastards have invented a war on Easter. No, really. Going to the phones in just a minute, but we'll talk about this later. Fox News, Radio Rwanda, and Bill Donahue have invented the war on Easter.
based on the tissue paper thin anecdotal evidence that someone in Munson Township, Ohio, wanted to call what the town did an egg hunt instead of an Easter egg hunt. By all means, I say put the word Easter out front because that reminds us that it has absolutely nothing to do with the Christian fantasy of zombies. It is a reverent moment in the name of Ishtar, Astarte, Eostre. Onward we go to the phones. You know the number, right? Light them up if you want to. Your last chance for about 3 days. Hey, welcome to the program.
Sorry, Bob. I'm just laughing because I'm sick. So I was like, you just reminded me because I had to look over the sinners in the hands of an angry God.
Ooh.
That is some deep shit. That particular sermon.
Oh, that is some deep hung up.
I mean, that dude is out there. Anyway.
Yeah, and how was he rewarded? By being made president of Princeton.
Right, that's right. No, I mean, he was, he was a man. Anyway, I don't know, because we had to read that for some class I took, and I was just like, oh, no. I had no idea. And then
I think they handed that to us in high school, if I recall, maybe like freshman ninth grade or something.
Yeah, no, it was just.
Can we get on to Kill a Mockingbird, please?
Well, it was like in a compilation, you know, in that period of writing, because it was a whole collection of all those other crazies that are like similar to the crazies now. I mean, it's just this endless cycle in this country, isn't it? I mean, it was a whole clutch of them back then, and they just, I guess they spent all their time scaring the shit out of folks.
Well, and, you know, there's an old saying that the Scots had so much fear of God that they had no fear of anyone else. And that enabled so much of the rapine that took place on the North American continent and, frankly, in Northern Ireland. And, you know, that other old saying that the Scots fell on, in arriving in Northern Ireland, the Scots fell on the ground and prayed to God and then fell on the natives and prayed on them. It works here, too.
Well, I mean, the Great Awakenings, you know, there was like a double-edged sword on that one, too, because they did sort of pave the way for, like, a broader amount of the population to question the authority that was in place. That was, like, the upside of them, you know?
Yeah, but there was a whole lot of downside in what I find, you know, you mentioned.
I know.
Because one of my forebears, who I've mentioned on the program, was part of the second Great Awakening, because there were two. We apparently woke up, fell back asleep, and woke up again.
Then the second one, yeah. And then, I mean, yeah.
And he rode all over the Virginias preaching that Jesus wanted white people to own dark-skinned people.
Oh, good night, yes. Yes. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, to some extent, it was just sort of a rebellion against reason, which seems to be a common thread in this country. We're forever dealing with that segment, aren't we?
We are. The mean, the stupid, ye have always with ye. You know, it's not just it's not just the poor. There's a lot, and it's generally, I think what that verse means is they're not the problem you think they are. You know, you've always got the poor. It's always somebody else making things worse.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you know, having been poor and probably will be again, you know, you don't really have much time for anything else except for being poor.
Well, that's why I said that the other night, Sandra. Poor people work about a million times harder than any Wall Street bankster or hedge fund manager might ever dream of doing.
And if you're not working, you're trying to dodge the various exploitation that's waiting for you around every corner and every imaginable manifestation, you know, be it food, buying clothes, anything, everything costs more, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's such it's so misrepresented what, you know, the poor go through in this country. And you know, people better get their mind right because there's a lot more of us.
But before you limit that to this country, Sandra, did you catch the story the other day about what some economic genius said about Japan?
What is it?
Their financial troubles are going to be legion and that they need to get busy and raise the sales tax right away.
Oh, God, that's always, let's socialize the risk right now. There's no other alternative. And speaking of that, I must say that to me, you know, there's some real crazies in power right now. This bitch is saying that he wants to pass a bill to force the Treasury, in case we don't raise the ceiling, to pay the interest and all the bondholders first and shortchange the Social Security, Medicare, those programs that need to be paid in the event of whatever the Republicans are trying to orchestrate. I mean, it is just so beyond, it's incredibly stupid, first of all, but it's so frightening. It's like, wow, these people are absolutely insane.
But as I think David from Maine noted a few nights ago, aren't we well advised to not credit them with being nuts, but with in fact being being wholeheartedly, fully sane, and absolutely devoted to screwing us?
Well, no, but I mean, yeah, but this is well, no, okay. There is no other way of describing this, though, because the plan isn't making any sense, because the Wall Street will respond accordingly to either event, though. You see what I'm saying? That's why I'm saying it's crazy.
Okay. You mean, yeah, because it's not connected in any wise to reality.
Right. Even if they shortchange the social safety net side, the market will still freak out in either case. But the idea that they can stand up straight face and say, well, no, we're going to take care of, you know, the bondholders first. In the face of that, they act like, and I say it advisedly, that they don't have to face elections. Oh, but wait, maybe they don't. And maybe that's another issue we need to grapple with here because of the fixed black box voting. You see what I'm saying? Because the behavior is such now that it ain't making no sense, because I know that there's endless money, but see, money isn't really enough, because Americans will always vote their pocketbooks. You see what I'm saying? But if their vote isn't real, like for real real, then this would explain the behavior. You see what I mean?
Yes.
You know, because at this point what they're looking like is well crazy. They've turned independents against them. They've lost all ground that they gained from the election. You see,
well, I don't know if you noticed, but some of these right wingers have been going back to their districts and holding town halls.
Yeah, they're getting yelled at.
Yeah, they're catching hail Columbia.
And they're getting hail from their so called constituents, because they're trying to make it invite only, and they still getting hail. You see what I mean? This is because they've crossed the Rubicon and they bought their own spin. It's like, wake the fuck up. No one wants to lose these entitlement programs, because you think you've turned the word entitlement into a dirty word. To people who've paid into it forever, entitlement is entitlement.
Yeah, right. They've turned the word entitlement onto its ear. Well, they've made the American people, I think, to one degree of success or another, Sandra, believe that entitlement means welfare. But by God, if you have paid into Social Security, you've got something coming. And if you're going to kill Social Security and you're going to kill Medicare, we better be getting a big check. You know, one of them big Bob Barker checks.
Well, they seem to have forgotten that. They're buying their own spin, and every poll that's rushing to them is telling them, you're fucked. All these governors, all these people, apparently if there's an election tomorrow, do-over, they would be bye-bye. So I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, because I think that, you know, we've entered into a period where things are really nasty because of past policies, and I'll explain to you that did you hear the report that McDonald's and Walmart is saying you need to brace yourself because the inflation is just going to get worse and worse, and there's been a $5 a gallon sighting. Okay, so we're at the same point, according to various analysts, worse than what we were before the fall of 2008. And I hope everyone remembers what happened in the fall of 2008.
Yeah, it all came unglued.
Yeah, basically. So this, I mean, this the economic situation is bad to worse, and if Obama's not careful, he'll be running in a recession. And
what?
Who can he blame for that? And I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump on him too much, but who didn't let the revenue come into the government by not letting those taxes expire? Okay? The Democrats, everyone, they did that, too. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, the Americans will forget about that. They don't know, they don't remember, but they do know $5 a gallon, and they know when you buy some Oreo cookies, you used to get 7, now you get 2. They can see that shit, okay?
One of the few things...
I'm sorry.
No, but that's true.
Oh, my God, you know?
No, that's how the American people measure their world, to the extent that they're even tuned into it. Because, you know, it used to be that Breyer's Ice Cream, and, you know, that's real high-end Tony stuff for folks like me, because it doesn't have any Goo-R gum in it. Breyer's ice cream used to be a half a gallon.
Right.
But now it's 1.25.
And then when you
whatever.
And then when you buy your jar of Skippy, it's like concave all the way to the middle of the damn jar. You're like, oh shit! You start spinning, all of a sudden you come up to the, you know how the bottom of it is.
Oh yeah, and the beautiful part of that is I remember hearing about that crap on NPR. Oh, 2-3 years ago, and the spin on that then and ever since has been, we're going to smaller portion sizes because America is tired of being supersized.
No,
but they're still charging the same money for it because the Breyer's ice cream ain't gone down.
Well, my favorite is the stories of, like, mothers, you know, trying to sort of stretch their budget and buy what they usually buy, saying, oh, shit, you know, I made dinner for all 6 of us. And it didn't, you know, I couldn't serve everyone. I'm like, what's going on? You know, whatever pack of mac and cheese, and all of a sudden, you know, so those are that's the real deal. And what we're seeing now in this country, I mean, the economic indices are like, if you pay attention to this stuff, are like something you've never seen before. You have deflation in assets, like house and cars and 401s, and then you have inflation in the gotta-have part of the economy, food, gas, health care. It's some sick shit, Bob.
Well, it is, and, you know, I've got a story here. I found it over at Alternet that kind of runs it's the sort of thing that runs through what you're talking about. The debt collectors. You know, we had that conversation a few months back about tax farming.
Yeah.
Well, the debt collectors are getting... are getting out of hand because they've squeezed as much as they've squeezed or can squeeze. A New York State debt collection agency pretending to be a lawyer called one man's wife about a little tiny gas card debt that the son had, okay? So the guy answering the phone offers to take a message, or the wife takes a message, and the debt collector says the following. The guy says to me, why don't you mind your own fucking business and put your wife on the phone? And the guy says, I don't know who you think you're talking to, buddy. And then they started having a shouting match. Okay? Then they go after the son. They said things like, we know your father's been molesting you. Why don't you have him take his cock out of your ass and stick it in your mouth? You know you like it. Why don't you have your wife come over here and give us blowjobs? You're a loser. Why don't you jump in front of a train and kill yourself? The guy recorded every word of it. You know, one line being, am I going to have to kill you to get you to pay this debt? That's a sign of desperation. Isn't it? I mean, when the debt collectors are losing their...
Wow. The whole situation is just complete chaos. And the thing that's so infuriating is you can just, you know, quickly surmise is... The government decided in 2008, oh, we're going to have to throw trillions at the bank instead of to the American people. So the banks get bailed out, and then they get cheap money, and what do? They buy commodities. What does that do? That drives everything up. And now we're being soaked with inflation. I mean, it's just crazy. I'm just sort of looking at this, I'm just stunned. And then we have the empty pulpit, i.e. President Not Sure. It's like, hello, go read some Teddy or do something. Because the MIA is just not on. Help. And I'm not saying that in a way that I'm expecting him to solve our problems, but damn, it's like you need to get present big time.
It's absolutely astonishing that, I mean, are we at that point where we kind of have to have that sort of confessional moment with ourselves where we realize that, you know, they don't get it and they're not gonna get it? I mean, because there's something out there, politically speaking, Sandra. We all know that at some point in the very near future, Trump is going to flame out, right?
Yeah.
And do we remember who is number two on the list behind Trump?
Romney?
Uh-uh. No, Romney can't even see the back of the pack right now.
Who?
Mike Huckabee.
Oh, right. That freak. Yes.
Now, this guy is constantly positioning. He is constantly positioning. And one of the things that has happened recently is that because Huckabee has a typical gospel minister's ability to channel both authority and compassion and sympathy. The last two are entirely phony, by the way. But he did something. He did something fairly recently that that a lot of people said, well, this is completely out of character. No, it wasn't. Not for a person who really thinks he can beat that one in November 2012. He came out and made a complete break with his Fox News brother, Glenn Beck. You know, because Beck went on this thing where he decided to attack Michelle Obama some more over the obesity initiative.
Still?
Yeah.
Wow.
Beck says, so now going out all out to have government limit the food choices available at our kids' school to make sure that grocery stores pop up in what they are calling, and I'm not kidding you, food deserts. There's no salad bars. It's a food desert. Then we're going to put the grocery stores instead of fast food businesses. They'll limit what we can watch on TV, what ads we can run, and how long we can watch. No doubt we'll start mandating certain kinds of activities as part of this wonderful government campaign. This is from the pages of the Progressive Playbook. You're too stupid. You need the government to fix your life, and they agree with you that government has no place in this business, but we're going to help make things better. Yes, they're coming, and they are slowly but surely taking away your freedom under the guise of helping you. You know, the same sort of paranoid rambling that he does, right?
Yeah.
Only here's the difference. Huckabee, who feels like he is anointed by God, put out in writing the following. This week, Glenn Beck has taken to his radio show to attack me and call me a progressive, which he has said is the same thing as cancer and a Nazi. What did I do that apparently caused him to link me to a fatal disease and a form of government that murdered millions of innocent Jews? I had the audacity, not of hope, but the audacity to give respect to the efforts of First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign to address childhood obesity.
Back up a bit. Huckabee is linking progressives to a form of government that killed Jews?
No, Beck is.
Oh, okay.
And Beck, in turn, called him a progressive.
Okay, I got you. Good. Nice.
So he goes on and says, I'm no fan of her husband's policies for sure, but I have appreciated her efforts that Beck misrepresented, either out of ignorance or out of a deliberate attempt to distort them to create yet another boogeyman hiding in the closet that he and only he can see. Whoa, you know? And the First Lady's approach is about personal responsibility, not the government literally taking candy from a baby's mouth. He seems to fancy himself a prophet of sorts for his linking so many people and events together to describe a massive global conspiracy for pretty much everything. Sadly.
So they're turning on, okay, so they're turning on each other, because that Breitbart blamed Bent for the Shirley Sherrod thing.
Yeah.
And
of course we recall how the White House responded to Beck and empowered him by creating the Shirley Sherrod problem, right?
Yeah.
But that was back when he was wielding terrible media power. But now he's a wounded lion laying on the ground and the jackals are circling. And he ends by saying, Beck needs to stick to conspiracies that can't be so easily debunked by fact. Why Beck has decided to aim his overloaded guns on me is beyond me, but he ought to clean his gun and point it more carefully lest it blow up in his face like it did this time. Now that's a guy who's dead on serious about being president of the United States. I mean, he's still a loon, but yeah, they're turning on each other, but what I think is most telling out of that, Sandra, is the fact that Mike Huckabee, in a trice, made himself look millions of times more reasonable than either Trump or Beck.
Right.
And at the same time, issued a dog whistle to the Republican Party that he is a real, live, serious candidate because he didn't, you know, he said something decent, and that's what can trigger the legitimate candidate status in America in 2011 now, Sandra, just not saying something crappy about the First Lady. That's the, you know, that's how low the benchmark is for Republicans.
Well, obviously, I mean, yeah, that's true, because also with the media is never on the side of the American people, and I hate to speak in broad terms now, but I mean, that's where we're at. Because, you know, if they're going to praise something like that Ryan plan, obviously they're not on our side, because the more information gets out about his plan, the more the American people are recoiling. And so someone like Huckabee, who isn't an idiot, you know, I guess he's going to form himself in any way possible. And Glenn Beck is, you know, laying the groundwork, because he's been discredited and is falling by the wayside. And Donald Trump, that can't last, please.
No, that ends as quickly as he finds out whether or not he's going to get renewed.
But the problem that I'm having, though, with the Obama, now Obama may stumble into a second term, but is he going to go into the second term with a full-blown depression? You know, I'm sorry. I look at economics, and I'm just looking at this situation and going, good Jesus. Because another thing, did you know that only 66% of men had jobs in this country, the lowest ever?
Wow.
Okay, that's the lowest ever. So, you know, those sort of numbers, they just sort of stick in my mind. And another one I found, only 45% of Americans had a job in 2010.
And the question, going back to something you've raised in the past, Sandra, is that the new normal?
Well, if it's the new normal, you know, Obama better get his thumb out his ass and say, if you don't raise taxes, we won't raise the damn ceiling. You understand what I'm saying?
Wow. I mean, It feels a hell of a lot like a corner here that we're in.
Well, it's just sort of not good. And, you know, the polling for the Democrats say, tax the rich, tax the rich. We want to tax the rich. Now, if someone can step up and take the mantle on that, they will win the election. But the problem is the funding part of this whole equation. That's the hesitation.
How are you going to get the billion? Are you talking about the campaign funding or the?
Right. Yeah, that's the hesitation, because you know, people are getting real fidgety, and as you do when you walk up to a gas station and it's over $5 a gallon.
Yeah. See, I've got this little troll.
I've got this little troll that follows me around that I had to unfriend on my Facebook page, who apparently thinks that I give a damn what he thinks, who messaged me early this morning. You know, it was one of those hell of a way to start the day kind of things, Sandra, with, woohoo, $5 a gallon gas, yippee, yay, here's hoping it goes to $8. And, you know, he prides on himself on, oh, I haven't owned a car in years. And I understand, you know, if we paid, Sandra, the real cost of gasoline, it might be up that high.
Right, but this is in Europe. Where's the bullet train, Bob?
Bingo.
I mean, that's my thing. I'm all for using high gas as a disincentive. You know, that whole sort of policy stuff is fine. You know, tax cigarettes and all that madness. But come on now, what's the alternative?
Right, and especially you know, because I think I've raised this issue in the past. It's one thing to talk about getting less automobiles inside America's cities, but, you know, there's still a few of us that live out in the hinterlands, and if, you know, well, I mean, hell, we're feeling it right now. Damn near $4 a gallon gas, and, you know, $20 don't buy you much, especially when you drive a rusty red pickup truck. Well, Bob, why don't you buy yourself a nice little Prius? Let's make the payments on that.
Well, and it can all be traced back to some of the monetary policy again. It's like the constant attentiveness to the investor class at the expense of everything else can be blamed for all of this. Because why are gas prices going up now? We can say it's a turmoil in the Middle East.
But there's no information that supply has in any wise been hindered.
But to me, it's more of the QE, this QE, 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 and the speculation that's going on, along with just general gouging of the resource corporations. And it's sick because we're spending $1 trillion on defense to so-called do what? If we're paying $6-7 a gallon and we can't catch a damn bus, you see what I mean? So, it someone's gonna pay, okay?
But I know who's gonna. You and I both know who's gonna pay. And yeah, it's gonna be the same people that have been paying since this whole thing blew up. You know, I haven't seen a story yet of a guy who used to work for Lehman Brothers who now lives in a cardboard box.
Oh, no, I don't. No, I'm not even talking about that. I'm just saying that the you know how I mentioned before that people are all aghast at the sort of severe swings from the House, you know, with the back and forth with
right.
Republicans. Well, that's what I mean when I say who's going to pay. I just think that the politics are going to stay volatile because the low information voter, they don't know what the hell is going on. They can't make the connection. All they can do is throw their vote against the incumbent. And so we go back and forth, back and forth.
And therefore, and we stay in perpetual campaign mode and nothing can ever get done. Did you catch the story out of yesterday that President Not Sure has ordered Eric Holder to look into manipulation of oil prices through speculation? Didn't that just warm the cockles of your heart? Haven't we been to this movie before? And the Department of Justice comes back and says, well, sir, there's really not much we can do about it. They're definitely doing it. There's nothing we can do.
Yeah, no, well, Obama's already said, well, there's not really much I can do in the short term. You know, the problem with that statement is, no, sweetie, there is no short term. You know, all the indicators are that unless the dollar becomes strong miraculously, you know, there's no reason why these prices are going to come back down. You see what I mean? I just think that...
Well, and you've got to... You know, there is that... You know, the supply is not interrupted, but you've got to also take into account that one of these days, and I think this is part of the fantasy land that a lot of people want to live in, one of these days, it ain't going to be no $8 a gallon gas. It's going to be $100 a gallon gas. Because there isn't going to be much left. And that day may not be tomorrow or the next day, but that day's coming.
And there is not enough. I'm tired, frankly, of talking about, you know, Van Jones gives a great speech. And frankly, I would rather, have Van Jones' speech on energy than Barack Obama's. But we're, you know, I said at the beginning of the program, we have just been through a year of little love taps from Mother Nature saying, straighten up and fly right. We're...
It's just sort of compounding. And speaking of that, it was a really short story out of Japan about, how the officials now think that, some fuel is melting in one of those reactors. Did you see that report?
No.
So it's just, and then it just kind of disappeared. You know, a lot of information is just being disappeared.
Well, you know, another one sort of hit the radar, blipped and gone, and that was over here, and it dovetailed very nicely with a story about Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma. Don't know if you saw this one, but a couple of days ago in, was it Pennsylvania or New York, a gas well fracking operation went south in a big way, completely sideways. And as a consequence, waters were poisoned all around the area. And groundwater may have been poisoned. And that just gone. You know, instead, looking over, this is one of my favorite hobbies, Sandra, looking at the latest news column at CNN.com.
Okay, yeah, well, what's the top? I mean, it's always scary. What's the top of the story?
Well, actually, violence sweeps across Syria, followed by official Libya army to leave Misrata. McCain in Libya urges help for rebels. You know, what happened to, it's really bad when American actors go abroad and run contrary to whatever. Now, that's all gone. It's okay if you're a Republican. U.S. quits Pakistan drone base. Well, you know, could that be because we're moving our drones to Libya? Yeah, why not? And you get a possible suspect in mail bomb probe. Then you get to it. Praying for rain in Texas. Body hunt leads to teeth on New York beach. Facebook posts lead to robbery arrests. And then Lady Gaga fan resuscitated at concert. Tattoo leads to murder conviction. Lindsay Lohan theft charge reduced.
And to top it off, you have...
Charlie Sheen visits Georgia Tech.
Oh, no, that Charlie Sheen show is still on the road?
Yeah, he apparently retooled it.
Oh, God, it's so hideous. But listen, this thing in Tennessee, I am not kidding, with the... you can't talk about...
Yeah, don't say gay.
Right, but the funniest thing about this fool, the senator's name, I'm not kidding, is Stacey Kemp. You don't can't even make
Oh, cue up the cabaret soundtrack.
You can't make it up. Stacey Campfield? Really? Are you kidding? Listen.
But
I just laughed. I mean, it's so horrific what's going on in the state houses, but I mean, I got to find my humor where I can, but his name.
Campfield. Stacey.
God, you know, I mean, yeah, get a name change or something, fool. Don't take it out on all the poor.
Yeah, it's like Anthony Weiner said to John Boehner, hey, what am I, Anthony Weiner? Embrace it, John, embrace it. No great big fracking spill story at CNN. But the best part of it all is Brian Kilmeade interviewing Jim Inhofe. You know, and Jim Inhofe, I'm not going to work the blue side of the street, but that man does things for oil companies that are just embarrassing. But there's never been one documented case of groundwater contamination in the history of the thousands and thousands of hydraulic fracturing. Brian Kilmeade, Senator, has it ever poisoned anybody? It's never poisoned anyone.
Wow.
Yeah, me too. I just sat there looking at the story on the page, with my mouth hanging open, catching flies. You know, this guy obviously hasn't seen Gasland. He hasn't seen the guy turn on his faucet and light it.
No, but see, you know, you were a functioning, thinking person before 9/11. So was I. And I just, it seems like this whole century so far has been the century of disaster and, oh, we couldn't imagine that it would happen, followed by nothing. You know, I've never seen anything like it. And now we have this ongoing nuclear catastrophe where they keep expanding the, you know, fallout zone. Have you noticed that? It keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's no real plan.
There is one plan. They have the Japanese government has threatened to incarcerate anybody they catch going back in to get their stuff. Yeah, that much they've got a plan for. But how are the prison guards going to feel about guarding, you know,
exactly,
people who are glowing and clicking?
No, but the thing is, though, they seem to be suggesting that this may never end. This is the sickening feeling that I'm getting about this disaster.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe that's another bumper sticker we need to add to the collection. Plutonium is forever.
And can you tell me why a country like Germany would be like, oh, shit, and shut down their nuclear reactors and over here? It's just going on and on to the point where PG&E is demanding that we extend. I told you about that.
Yes.
In the face of, I mean, why does this country behave this way? We should have shut down at least all the reactors that were the same type as Fukushima, right?
Well, I mean, don't we ground airplanes of a specific type when it turns out that their roof peels open?
Well, no. Is that what they did with the Southwest? Are they still flying around?
They were supposed to have been grounded.
Well, I made my best friend laugh this morning because I told her, she was talking about some product, and I said, well, you know, it's a free market. When you get hurt or when the girls get injured, you know, then they'll take it off the market. You know, and she had never really thought of it in terms of that.
Right, until then.
And then just the free market. Until then, it's just too damn bad. Anyway, and so I think that's just how everything is now in this neoliberal world. It's like we just keep running shit on and on and on. No matter what the risks are, we're still going to make our money. And when it all goes to hell, well, too bad.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's just game over.
Yeah, I guess. But anyway, well, you know, another really uplifting conversation.
We're so good. We're good at these, Sandra. What are you talking about?
I don't, you know, I just am sort of, I don't know. I don't understand. I mean, you got people, you got liberals singing to Obama, paying $5,000. They're singing. I think everyone's lost their minds. That's what I think.
I saw that. I saw that the other day. The, what is that? The Fresh Juice campaign?
I don't know what it is, but they were singing and it cost thousands.
Maybe we're not talking about the same thing. This is a campaign offering to pay money to people if they will make a video of themselves singing this song that winds up being about Bradley Manning in public. And they call themselves the Fresh Juice Party.
I guess that's using one of the multiple intelligences. I don't know.
I saw that and I thought, wait, where would you have them? There are some people out there that are digging around trying to find out whether or not maybe some of that Bradley Manning advocacy fund money might be going into it.
Well, let me ask you something. I mean, the Bradley Manning thing has, like, taken on, it's this huge cause celeb for the progressives, right? Can we carve out what kind of progressives, Bob? Do we have a term? They seem to have lost their minds about it.
It's being led by Glenn Greenwald and Fire Dog Lake.
Yeah, but there doesn't seem to be any other issue. They can't seem to do but one issue at a time. Is that what the problem? Is that what's going on? Because I don't really understand.
Well, when your advocacy is based, and I am in no wise point saying anything about anyone who is morally concerned and made absolutely sick by what's being done to and with Bradley Manning, because I am among those people. But there is an element of people who are going to make money off of his imprisoned ass. And yeah, they are one-trick ponies, and they can only do one issue at a time because they only do the issue that's making them a buck.
Oh, that's harsh, man.
Well, I mean, you know, I've got a very, very well-tuned ear for grifts and cons.
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think that it's really sort of scandalous because that poor kid. They're now talking about they have to assess his competency. He wasn't crazy before all this happened. You see what I'm saying? I'm like,
no, but they've roasted it. They've Jose Padilla'd him.
No, and it's just, you know, to me.
I mean, do you remember where Jose Padilla wound up?
Yeah.
He wound up so fried in the head after all that time at the Charleston Navy Brig and elsewhere that when they took him to have a dental exam, he came unglued.
Well, listen, and you couldn't find out any damn information about that kid now if your life depended on it. You see what I'm saying?
No.
What happened to him?
And see what and the same thing's going on with Bradley Manning. They're cooking his brain. All right. And it's not so much, you know, maybe some of it was at first. Maybe some of it was about let's find out if he knows anything or has a relationship with Julian Assange. Blah 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 blah. But when you get to the point that you realize that you have subjected a person to torture to get information that the person didn't have in the first place, the last thing you want is that person ever saying anything about the methods that were used against him to try to get the information he didn't have, if I don't sound insane yet. So then you cook his brain via these tactics so that the most he can ever do, if he ever does appear in front of a microphone, is dribble oatmeal.
Well, maybe.
And that's what's been done to him.
Yeah, maybe they've done that MK Ultra, you know, psychic driving shit, basically, you know, doing that to him, you know. But my question is, though, they've moved him, so whoever can't drive up to visit him from Fire Dog Lake, and also, what makes, are we supposed to think that it stopped just because it's at a federal civilian prison now?
Is he in civilian? No, he's just been taken away from the Marines.
Right, and so, and it's like I said, you know, I know is it the Eighth Amendment? I know a few amendments are being just brutalized in this case, but I say it again, we have 2.3 million people locked up in this country.
Who are subjected to the same crap every day.
And, you know, you go into prison for...
Well, let's go for a little more historical perspective while we're at it, Sandra. This is the nation that executed Eddie Slovic. Remember Eddie Slovic? Private Eddie Slovic? Second World War?
All right, that's right. Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, maybe some of the methods are new, but the authoritarian urges of the military aren't.
That's what, yeah. No, and it's just sort of... I don't know. I guess I'm just having a hard time, you know, articulating because I understand the sort of outrage about this one particular case. But why is it that you can't make any analysis about the whole incarceration mentality? You know, the whole lockup of the whole, you know, it's just powerful, of course.
Well, because for some people, it doesn't fit the meme of what they are trying to accomplish.
Which is a civil liberties thing?
No. Money.
Money, right.
For others, it's a case of, you know, this is one of those things we have a hard time with as liberals, or progressives, or whatever we want to call ourselves. We can't do macro and micro at the same time. But the macro picture is that we are, you know, and this is something I've said for years. It's not something that I only came up with when I heard about Bradley Manning. We are an entire culture with a punishment fetish. We manifest our good feelings about ourselves by mistreating people who have run afoul of the law, and then saying to ourselves, "There but for the grace of God." And it's a really, really sick way to live, Sandra.
Yeah, no, that is perverse. And I mean, I know we're jumping, but that's what I was saying about Obama's speech. There, you know, that saying was in there. That always gets hair on the back of my neck, going, just for the reason you just articulated. It's like, is that the only way we're going to operate? Oh, I got to just be thankful that that horrible shit ain't happening to me? Is that the way to go?
Well, you know, we've got the Louisiana Gulf Coast and Appalachia that are entire geographic regions that are standing in for all of that.
Yeah.
You know, and now we're about to expand it. You know, this being Earth Day, I think this is an appropriate topic. But now it's going to be Pennsylvania, New York, places like that where the water is not going to be fit to drink. And by the way, I asked her, yeah, it was in northern Pennsylvania. The dateline on the story was Allentown, where a gas fracking operation let loose literally thousands of gallons of toxic liquid waste this past Wednesday, contaminated an entire stream, and get this, Sandra, forced the evacuation of 7 families who lived nearby, and crews couldn't get the gusher under control.
And so what's the state of it now?
As of April the 20th, state environmental regulators were taking water samples from the tributary of Tawanda Creek, which is stocked with trout.
And those families are where?
Don't know. New York Times didn't follow up.
Of course, you know?
But you've got people who live near these operations. I mean, there are people who were well-off middle-class folks living in $150,000 houses that are now worth near nothing. Couldn't give them away. And the gas companies have next to no liability whatsoever and are almost immune from suit for all intents and purposes.
And that governor there is trying to make all of Pennsylvania just one big frack, right?
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at, working from that idea of there, but for the grace of God, Sandra, let's mark off everybody in Pennsylvania and New York State from the there, but for the grace of God, go I crowd. You're out. The Tennessee River watershed 2 years ago, as of Kingston, Tennessee, and the massive outflow of toxic waste from the Kingston ash dump, well, they're off the there but for the grace of God list now. It's spreading. It's cancer.
I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, yeah, I think we're on to something with this whole meme. That, you know, that does not make me feel better hearing that bullshit applied to anything at this point.
Yeah, I mean, at some point in time, you know, we're going to be down to one little pocket going there but for the grace. Oh, dear.
You know, I mean, I understand that saying is supposed to, you know, impart some empathy, but once again, it's being completely bastardized, and, you know, it's just not right anymore as a saying. And every time I hear it now, I'm just like, oh, no, there's another piece.
Well, you know, I just got a note in from David in Tennessee. He says, there are black folks in prison for holding three rocks of crack. There is a white kid in jail for unleashing information. David said secrets, but the fact of the matter is they weren't even secrets. As Matt Osborne pointed out a long time ago, everything in WikiLeaks was just, at least on the U.S. side of things, was just stuff that was stamped no foreign, which means no foreign eyes. Okay? It wasn't classified. It wasn't level 3 doubles top secret probation. You know, no. It wasn't the Niedermeyer stuff. But taking those two things together, what David draws from it is, he says, sadly, the various versions of those of us on our side of this struggle who want to save the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins, that means that those supporters can't be bothered to care about the latter supporters, can't be bothered to care about the supporters of the former. In other words, the people who care about the white kid in military jail are somehow so myopically blinded and blinkered that they can't see, Sandra. They can't see that 19-year-old in prison for those three rocks of crack. He doesn't exist. He is for all intents and purposes as invisible as he ever was to that segment of the population. I mean, we need to remember that. As we consider what is the internet, that with very few exceptions, the internet is in large part a very white, very college educated, very at least stably mobile, if not upwardly, institution.
Well, no, and it's very balkanized, but I mean, what you're saying though, I mean, it's true, but even someone like Sheldon Wallen, who is an old political theorist who taught at Yale, in his book, he mentions the whole incarceration of black folks and ties it to the idea that black people in general are much more, have much more political efficacy and agency because of our rot in this country. So he makes the tie of locking them up to the total domination of the police state. You need to keep those people manage because they know how to play the game, essentially. And what bugs me is this white internet that you're talking about, they don't have a clue of how to tie these things together. And we are lost if we cannot make those connections. So lost.
And that's the, you know, that opens up the 9-day symposium, Sandra, on how do you make that connection? I mean, is this the stand? Is it stand and scream time? Is it militancy time? Do we only come together by dividing more? And I ask these things not rhetorically, but actually. But I don't have the first daggum answer.
No. It's difficult. But on the other hand, though, the one thing that isn't difficult is to identify something so overarching as taking people's freedoms away. That is not a difficult thing for anybody to wrap their head around. So that's why I just, you know, am exasperated by it, because I just think that the progressives just have their heads up their asses, because there's so many things to coalesce around in this society that are large.
And yet we are told, for all that you and I and everybody here in the Horn family, in large part, to the extent that we go back and forth complaining about President Not Sure, anytime a complaint is raised about him, somebody throws that polling data up in your face and says, well, look, 85% of the black community is still solidly behind him.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, like I said, I don't, you know, there's a lot of sort of, I don't know about that anymore. Sorry. I'm not believing it. I think there's some definite pushback, you know. And certainly on the left side of the black community, the people in the community who are
And he's certainly not getting a lot of love from the hardcore right-wing evangelical side of that community either, is he?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not too, because I stay very clear of that. I can't deal with them. They scare me.
I mean, that kind of blew my mind. We didn't really talk. I don't know if you heard the story from last night and the night before. I ran the audio night before last of this Orlando and Glynis Bethel down in Tennessee. They are the they're working Fred Phelps's side of the street. And instead of having signs that say God hates fags, they just have big neon signs, you know, those bright day-glow poster board signs that just says God hates, and they claim to preach fire and brimstone. They got three children, and they're trying to run a hustle on the Williamson County, Tennessee, school district. And, you know, I don't, you know, where it's not necessary to point it out, I try not to point out, ethnicity or race or anything, but, this is an African American family of evangelical hustlers, and they've dropped a lawsuit for one for 20 and one for $5 million on the Williamson County, Tennessee school board, the Williamson County itself, probably the principal, the teacher, the janitor,
the little kid that raises the flag every morning, because on the way back, and you got to understand, Williamson County is a very is relatively speaking well off. And on the way back from a home, this is important, from a homeschooling conference in Ohio. Okay? From a homeschooling conference in Ohio, they stopped in Williamson County, Tennessee, on the way to their home, which they have, and which the mother, Glynis Bethel, says is paid for, in Loxley, Alabama. They stopped in Brentwood, Tennessee, and tried to enroll their children in the school there, claiming they were homeless. And using the McKinney-Vento Act as a cudgel. And they did so to the point where the daughters, the two daughters, I guess, were arrested. And Mama Glynis was screaming her fool head off. Children had to be kept locked down in their classrooms until they were cleared. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. And then immediately filed the lawsuit against sue them all and let God sort them out.
Because what, the school district caught them, or?
No, refused to enroll their children as homeless.
Oh, okay.
Because they had proof in hand of the fact that they had a home in Loxley, Alabama.
That they lived somewhere else.
Yeah.
No, this is the first time I've heard this story.
And the thing is, they're as right-wing as Fred Phelps is. And is filled with hate. And so, you know, the original nature of my question was that, you know, whether it's a right-wing evangelical so-called Christian like Alan West or these clowns, you know, I don't see there being a lot of support for Barack Obama from that quarter.
Well, and then there's a, you know, which I've seen, you know, the whole, the abortion is taking our leaders posters.
Oh, the billboards?
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, no. So, you know, I can't imagine those black folks supporting Obama. But, I mean, truth be told, I still imagine he will get the vast majority of the black vote. The problem is you may get a lower turnout of them, I think. It's probably more of a possibility.
Yeah, because you need every last one to balance against the teabaggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, and booger eaters, right?
Right, but I don't even know. But, see, I think Obama may have the independent vote, I guess, if that even exists. I know it does, but you know what I mean. It's
yeah, like, if he goes the soak the, and it's the smart thing to do, you know, stay going down the road on the soak the fat boys theme.
Well, he has to come up with some sort of response to the deteriorating pocketbook issues. That's all I'm saying. I don't, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, he referred in that one speech. He referred to Paul Ryan. He said, Paul Ryan is trying, and this is a quote, trying to be America's accountant and trying to be responsible. Now, in neither my book nor I would surmise yours, Sandra, is that some sort of fire and brimstone indictment of Paul Ryan. That sounds rather mild. I can think of a lot of things that I would say about Paul Ryan, little Eddie Munster-headed freak. Little social security suck, who went to, yeah, I mean, we know his history.
Yeah.
But he says that about, and so Alan West, and I mean, this guy bears watching because, I mean, he's a special brand of crazy, and he sits in the House of Representatives. He's a freshman. And in return for that, Paul Ryan is trying to be America's accountant. Responded by saying that Barack Obama is a low-level socialist agitator with third-world dictator-like arrogance. And, you know, the teabagging crowd and the straight-ticket Republican crowd eats that stuff up.
Yeah, but, I mean, I still think... That just sounds beyond the beyond. But I know, you know, that guy, wasn't he like the one that tortured somebody?
Yeah, that's the same guy.
Yeah. Wow. No, but anyway, I mean, you know, because, you know, I'm as schizophrenic as the next progressive about Obama, that's for sure. But there's also forces at play that can be problematic for him. One is this, you know, the major one is the way the economy is going. I don't know. I mean, I don't want him to lose.
No, I mean, I'm not out there. I'm not out. I don't have my Run Ralph Run sticker on the front of the house.
No, and I don't, you know, I just don't know. I don't really know. I know we're looking, this time next year we'll be in full swing, right?
I think we kind of already are.
Okay, well, you know, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have to kind of get, you know, my outlook about a second term for Obama in some sort of perspective.
Well, and that's the thing that I try to be straight with folks about, Sandra, is that I know how I'm voting on November the 6th, 2012. I know what I'm going to, I know whose name my little check mark's going by. And it's not going to be Ralph, and it's not going to be whoever the Republican. I'm going to vote for Obama. But I guess the only thing I'm trying to get across to people is that we do it with our eyes open and with an eye toward understanding what the stakes are.
Yeah,
and what he is and isn't doing, because, you know, I still argue that there is an element to which, you know, he's like St. Paul, willing to be all things to all people. And toward that end, we've got more advocacy work to do.
Well,
we've got more voice raising to do.
Yeah, and people really have got to listen to what Obama is saying, because, for example, he's accepted this idea that you cut government in the face of this horrific economic downturn. And that is a huge problem, Bob.
That's
a big one when he's celebrating cuts.
And I got to take you backwards just a minute, because I had an email in from Reverbo. And he says, ask Sandra, please, did she really say she saw a stat that only 45% of Americans had a job in 2010? And if so, where was that?
Oh, yeah, that's, there's an article in Business Insider. It's called The 24 Signs of Economic Decline in America. Business Insider. Just go to businessinsider.com.
Because that's, you know, that's cold chills down the spine sort of information.
Yeah, no, these statistics are just an outrage. There's, yeah, the average American now spends 23% of their income on food and gas. You see what I'm saying? Them some crazy numbers.
Yeah, because it used to be you calculated I can own a home if, and wasn't it like you were going to spend one-third of your income on your home?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In California right now, that's about 46%.
And there's that little word, unsustainable.
Yeah, and there's another one here. It's 59% of Americans receive money from the federal government. 59%.
And that's in the form of WIC, AFDC, food stamps, unemployment compensation, I guess.
No, just, yeah. Just, yeah. Yep. I mean, it's just these sort of things are, you know, the statistics, of course, can always be massaged. And any statistics from the Bureau of Labor should always be kind of fish-eyed. But, you know, those are the numbers that we work with. But, yeah, so Reverbo should go to Business Insider. He should check that out anyway. They have a lot of interesting articles.
I'm going to go and have a look myself, because this seems like it's got the potential to really sort of have a sobering flavor about it.
Yeah, anyway, listen, let me let you go. Oh, my God, we've been talking forever.
Yeah, but it was a dandy. Have yourself a great weekend, Sandra.
Oh, you know, actually, you know, I'm doing, you know, the person who had the 60th birthday party?
Yeah.
When now I'm putting on my DJ hat, and they're doing a huge blowout tomorrow. So
oh, awesome.
I'm DJing at some, you know, at the party, so.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah, you got a nice rig to work with?
Well, see, I just got this whole, you know, they have the DJ sort of mixing for the PCs now.
Oh,
I just bought this external sound card so I can separate the channels, and now I have a monitor.
Whoa!
To hear what the hell I'm mixing. Anyway,
that'll be fun. Record it.
Yeah, I'm gonna record it. You know, because I gotta find some music for the kids. But anyway, listen, I digress. Have a nice evening.
All right, mix them good.
All right, bye.
Later, Sandra, a woman of many talents. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
More bad news.
Oh, no.
In the way of clarity and tying threads together. By the way, do you know who the CEO of Business Insider is?
I ain't going to like this, am I?
No, you're not. And I'm the reason why I'm saying this is we're going to tie a thread together, ladies and gentlemen. Henry Blodgett is the CEO and editor-in-chief, a Yale graduate who previously worked, pay attention, on Wall Street before being barred from the securities industry after a conviction for securities fraud. And
I guess there's some truth in that insider part of Business Insider, huh?
There you go. Now, pay attention to this. The way everything is being sold to us. This is important for everyone to understand this. The number one book on Amazon, can you guess it, sir?
It's by Jerome Corsi, and it's about the birtherism.
You are right. You are correct. Now, what is happening on right-wing radio regarding that? I see Bob Seska and a lot of the progressives are being happy about this birtherism. I wouldn't be so happy about that, because you see, here's the thing that's happening in the news, is what they're doing is they're coming out and they're saying, you know, this birtherism stuff, it's crazy. Obama's not from Kenya. He's not a foreigner, and we really need to drop this talk. And then the other anchor will say, you know what? You're right. I think we need to get back on track because Obama, he's not from Kenya. He's from America. And the more and more you say Kenya, it goes back to that psychological driving. The more and more you say birth certificate, it goes back to, well, somebody has doubts about him. I don't know anymore, Margaret. I don't know anymore, John. I don't know anymore, Patrice. Just all across the country, that's what's happening. Everyone is unsure, just like the deodorant. And they're not going to raise their hand.
No, and remember, if I understand your point correctly, David, the amount of time, especially in the 24-hour news cycle, the amount of time that can be devoted to issues is extremely finite, and we already have a for-profit media that is not known for its long-term attention span. So consequently, every minute that is spent in saying, I don't think he's a Kenyan, do you think he's a Kenyan? No, I don't, Phil. Back to you, Bob. Is time that is not spent talking about, pardon me, America?
Right, exactly. It's filler killer. For lack of a better term, it's filler killer. It's distraction 101. And now here's the other thing that people need to pay attention to. These signs are still going up everywhere. Sandra will get a kick out of this because it shows the hypocrisy and also the nerve of this. You know where they put a sign recently of where's the birth certificate? That guy from World News Daily, and he paid for a sign. You know where he put it?
Oh, no.
Compton, California. It's not an accident. It's not an accident.
No, that's in your face.
Right. And the sign, which is drastic, which is different from, this is the other thing that people need to pay attention to, the messaging, the symbolism, the sign, which is different than, it's a different evolution of the sign. It's black and white. And it says, where's the birth certificate? Kind of symbolizing, we got a race war going on, people. And we can do whatever we want. See this sign? Look at it.
That's disturbing.
I know, but you see, the thing is this.
Let's drill this down one more level.
Yeah.
There is not a billboard space to be had in this country that is not owned by some advertising company.
Right.
Every time a billboard goes up that says
abortion is genocide in the black community, or the world ends on May 21st, or where's the birth certificate? Some advertising company, which is generally controlled by a giant corporation, probably transnational, has made a decision inside its hive brain that's something they'll take money for.
Right.
On the other hand, if you were to, okay, let's use this. If you were to want to put up a mountaintop removal billboard or a Bradley Manning billboard, and we have some experience with some of these things, not Bradley Manning, but if you were to do that, sorry, you lose. Oh, that's too controversial. It happens every football season at the Super Bowl. Little Timmy Jebo wants a 60-second commercial talking about how his mother had a miraculous birth just like Mary did.
Right.
They'll take the money. They'll cash the check. You want to have a commercial advocating that two people who love each other can get married regardless of gender? That's too controversial. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So as a consequence, you have to look at the sort of next layer down to find out it's not just the people, the so-called crazy people, and we had that conversation too. It's not just the so-called crazy people who are driving this stuff. It is the for-profit information industry.
Well, you know, the thing is that if you look at, and I've mentioned this before, but you take someone who I completely think is one of the biggest hucksters on the planet, which is the Beckster. Now, if you look at Beck, and people don't pay attention to this, but they should. If you listen to his radio show and you watch his TV show, his radio show is more paced out. There's laughter. It's kind of like a I Miss in the Morning type of feel.
Well, remember, he comes from before he was ever a brilliant political commentator, he was a member of a morning zoo crew, David.
Right, and the progressives, the thing that is constantly the centrists, the Daily Coasters, who are still, I guess, there, who are still promoting the centerism that's going on on the Democrat side, they still don't get the fact that Glenn Beck has a conference room and he plans this effing shit every single day with all of his people, whatever he's going to say next and whatever mannerism he makes. And it's to their perils. It's to their perils, people, when they say, oh my God, he's insane and he's losing it. The Becker is losing it. The same thing that they say, Breitbart has a meltdown on MSNBC. Oh, my God. Yeah, really? And how many books did he sell? How much promotion did he deal with? How much back traffic did he give Breitbart to MSNBC? Maybe that's why MSNBC is having him on. Did you ever think about that, people?
If not, it bears thinking about, David.
Because it's
very, very real. And look, I mean, actually, if you want to think about how a show like Beck's or most of the other ones work, planning for the next day's show begins with the end of the previous one. So if Beck goes off radio at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, the meeting happens at 11, and by the time you go home at 3. Or thereabouts, the show's done. The show's pulled together. The production team will be in. If the show starts at 6, the production team will be in at 4. They'll pull the clips that they needed, that they know that they need, or things like that. And a good one runs like clockwork. His production, frankly, is not bad. The people are doing a fairly good job. You know, one of the reasons that I don't do a lot of guests anymore on this program is because I don't have in 2, 3, 4, 5 days to sit around negotiating over when somebody can be on the show, because you have to book that stuff way the hell out.
Right.
Unless one just lands in your lap. We used to do a lot of that, but frankly, it became so confounded time consuming that and getting stood up is really frustrating, that it wasn't worth it anymore. But bear in mind, I will become interesting as soon as the presidential and Senate and congressional campaigns heat up again. Then I'll be interesting again. And that's why I don't care much for the sort of prostitute John relationship of so-called interviews, because nobody comes on your show because, you know, God, I just want to go talk to Bob or any other program. They come on because they've got something to move.
That's right. And you know who Hartman had on this week?
No.
Bart?
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. He had Andrew on, I haven't heard the conversation. I missed it. Probably by the grace of the spaghetti monster.
Well, I think the world of Tom, but I got a question to ask. How the hell is that not wrestling down to the armory on Saturday night?
You know, the thing about him, and he does it to his own gullibility. I think he does this because if you look back into his background, he's mentioned on the air. He was bullied every single day on his way to school, and I think he's having a bit of a bully flashback. When you bring the bully on, you can maybe reason with him and find some common ground.
See, I'm so far away from that, David. I can't even see it from here because, you know, we've got 3 hours, and sometimes they're long conversations, sometimes they're short conversations, but they're conversations among. The where everybody engaged in them has one thing in common.
Yeah.
And that is that we are all persons of goodwill who are seeking answers or seeking to vent or seeking some sort of concourse, collegiality, common cause, whatever you want to call it. But we are all doing so in good faith. And I can't say that. Where I can't say that about guests that come to this program via a booking agent. Under very few circumstances can I say that.
Here's another bumper sticker for the evening. You can't find common ground with Billy Mays. Because they're conning you. They're chumping you.
Oh.
And they're going to constantly do it over and over again as soon as you give them the microphone. And they don't care if you say they're crazy. How much money are you making on that other side? How much money are you making, Mr. Blogger? Where are your fleet of limos? Where are your five-star hotel reservations? Do you understand what is going on?
Where's your Maybach and your million-dollar Bugatti?
And here's the other thing. When I was mentioning Business Insider, people need to pay attention to the comments section there because it's very similar setup like Breitbart. Talking about investments, talking about deals. Talking about what's not good for the country, usually who? Obama. What's happened on Yahoo? Talking about the country, talking about what's bad for the country, talking about what's bad for the economy, we're headed towards socialism. Talking about who? Obama. You go and so forth, all of the comment sections. Now the thing to keep in mind, though, through all of this, is that all of this is just one big con, because none of these investors really care about who the president is. They just want to constantly run people to ground and put fear in their hearts so they can raise their stock portfolio and whatever they get, because they're what, Bob? They're disaster capitalists. Naomi Klein was right. They're making a killing off disaster, 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 disaster. And that goes for who? That goes for the wealthy liberals as well.
And that's the question I asked the night before last or last night or whenever about what does the necessary billion-dollar campaign funding threshold mean in liberal and progressive terms for where we stand and what does that make sense? Because the folks that Barack Obama is going to raise those millions from, that billion from, they're apparently not us, because otherwise they wouldn't give it. There's a phrase out there, and we'll just drop the F-bomb and to heck with it. There's a phrase out there called starfucker.
Right.
And our case has, our side has a terrible case of it. We've talked about this in the past. Mm-hmm. Instead of advancing the progressive liberal message or anything, we've got people who will give money to the DNC in exchange for being able to stand with and have Barack Obama put his arm around their shoulder. And it's not a Barack Obama phenomenon. It goes way back. You know, it's Bill Clinton, too.
Well, here's the other thing. Look at all the centrists on Twitter, on all the blogs, constantly berating anyone on the left trying to intimidate them about any position on take it what you will. I know there can be some moments of theatrics on the far left, and in that sense, that is the case with everything, even centrism. On the issues of civil liberties, on the issues of war, on the issues of poverty. Constantly, every single thing, there is a pushback from a centrist. You know why, Bob? Because a centrist has never felt a day of hunger. He's never felt that day of hunger, 99% of them. And the problem is that centrist, to me, is just like a goddamn Republican or a goddamn moderate Republican.
Yeah, and you should, you know, being from Maine, you know a little bit about that phenomenon.
They're keeping us down for a reason. And this is my point. This is the point that I'll end on. All of these companies that focus on the right wing, that continue to focus on the right wing and continue to prop them up as a fear and put their name out. What would happen if a genie came to them and if we were to make a wish and say, I wish that those companies, I wish everything would just the left would get its way. The liberal world would get its way and it would come forward and everyone would be happy and everyone would be just and we'd all have our quote unquote fair share. The wealthy liberals do not want that. They will never want that. And that is why we are their serfs. Cue Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys. Because that's where we are, people. That's it.
Surf and safari.
That's it.
My God. David, thanks a million. Oh, by the way, when's episode 3 come around?
I think episode 3 of History of Britain, and by the way, I do have to disagree with that archaeologist that you were talking about. I thought about it for a minute. And he needs to understand where BBC is in where BBC is in right now. BBC is fighting against all of these goddamn reality shows. And sorry, John Fox, all of the reality shows that Mark Burnett has created that are spinning off in all these other countries. And they have to put some kind of dramatic
No. I don't think that point's lost on John.
I know, but what I'm saying is that this is why all of these shows are driven in this way. Because their culture has been so dumbed down to this fact that you can't promote history the way you want to promote it. The same thing will happen to TLC, History Channel, Discovery Channel, you name it.
Yeah, National Geographic Channel.
Yeah, exactly, the National Geographic Channel. And you look around what's happening, and here's the one thing that I would say, what you were talking about, Sandra, about the headlines. I wouldn't blame CNN, and I wouldn't blame these new for-profit media, and here's why I wouldn't blame them. Because the American people have chosen the stories that they want, and they keep choosing the stories they want. And it's the race to the bottom, ladies and gentlemen. That's what it is.
Oh, there's no doubt that they're responding to demographics and focus grouping and crap like that. I just think it's a sad commentary on them and us.
I understand that, but I think the focus is too much on, I'm hearing this on the left side too much, about the focus on corporations. And really, the one person pulling the lever is Joe Sixpack, and he constantly pulls the wrong lever. And that says something about...
Well, it's like what Sandra said. They're so pissed off and so confused, the only political philosophy that they can manifest is throw the bums out.
Right, right. But anyways, history of Celtic Britain is going to be on. And one last thing. This is just a pop quiz for you. See if you can get it. Who played on the session for Goldfinger? The James Bond Goldfinger. Does anyone know what legendary musician played on the session for Goldfinger?
Oh, God, I'm licked right off the bat. I know that.
I found out, and I was surprised and shocked, but this shows to tell you that the circle will be unbroken. Jimmy Page played the guitar on Goldfinger.
Oh, see, David in Tennessee sent me a video the other night of Jimmy Page, who probably hadn't started shaving yet, on some talent program on British television from like the mid to late 50s. And it was mind-boggling. It was just mind-blowing to hear. They played two songs, and one of them was In Them Old Cotton Fields Back Home.
here's the other amazing fact before I go about the Goldfinger thing. It was done in one take, and Shirley Bassey collapsed immediately afterwards. Have a good night, everyone.
See you, David. Take care. Have a good weekend. Bye now. 22 minutes before the hour. I need to take just a wee little tiny little break. We'll be right back with the rest of your phone calls. Hey, the clock works tonight. I'm not going to get bitten in the butt, at least not by the clock. This is The Horn. We'll be back. Easter music. Don't leave me laying here. What'll they do in 2,000 years? Classic from Leon Russell. Roll away the stone. By the way, a little follow-up to David's trivia question. The David fraternity is quite amazing here. David in Maine talking about Jimmy Page playing on the Goldfinger soundtrack. David in Tennessee noting, Jimmy Page was the session guitar player in England. years before he ever played on Goldfinger, even. He fought against joining Led Zeppelin because he had to take a pay cut. And yes, the Shirley falling over story is completely true. And for Joe Sixpack, you know, Idiocracy has become life. Did you ever notice that Don't Touch My thing that evolved in that airport? Was it San Diego? Am I the only person that noticed that that's a line directly out of Idiocracy? Don't touch my junk! That's after Cletus impales himself on it while, you know, trying to ski jump into a swimming pool. On the other hand, Reverbo, who has frequently made the argument that sooner or later we've got to tell them we've held the bus long enough and we're leaving without you, Reverbo also notes, he says, great call from David, but I don't think you can lay it all on the feet of Joe Sixpack when he and everyone else is encouraged to be ignorant and constantly barraged with propaganda. Sadly, this combination keeps the powers that be in power. If only we could smarten up. But we'll have a hard time smartening up, Reverbo, because as you noted, we are, in fact, well chumped. You realize, of course, that Roll Away the Stone is, for all of its wonderful boogie, That's written in the voice of Jesus from the first person point of view. That takes some courage to write like that. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program,
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
Not too much. Yourself?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to try to sneak Agnes out of the house and maybe try to, I don't know, do something nice for her birthday here in a little bit.
Do me a favor, give her a squeeze for me and a happy birthday.
I certainly will.
Yeah, I mean, we are really happy that she's with us, just as we're happy that you're with us, for God's sake. But, Bob, remember a few days ago that you were talking about how they were trying to repeal the 14th Amendment?
Yes.
I think we should help them.
Okay. Well, make your case.
Okay. The 14th Amendment is what gives corporations life. Let's do away with it, and let's say that up front.
Because the citizenship of a corporation arises out of the 14th Amendment, right?
Correct. Correct. That's the dictum,
and it's not even dictum, the stupid little note in Union Pacific versus Santa Clara County takes that into account, doesn't it? I mean, that's how it rises, right?
Right. On the basis of the 14th Amendment. So we should say, fine, we'll help you get rid of it, and all your corporations suddenly become non-persons. Have a nice day.
And they all move to a P.O. box in Zug, Switzerland.
Good. Bye.
By the way, speaking of Zug, Switzerland, did you notice that BP has filed a lawsuit? I mean, I'm sorry, I had to laugh. BP has filed a lawsuit against Transocean.
Oh, no.
Yeah, on the anniversary of the spill, you know, and you've probably got a 2-year statute of limitations. Those do still apply to corporations. BP has sued Transocean, blaming them for the whole BP Horizon disaster.
You're putting us in a bad light.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, even though BP made money last year,
mm-hmm.
it was the best year for safety they've ever had.
Yeah.
They didn't make enough. And if you... You know, no car wreck case can compare. If you want to talk about flesh-eating, bloodthirsty lawyer monsters, you go and look at a case, at a case like that one coming up, because I mean it is going to be a bare knuckled brawl. And in line with what you just said, for anybody who may want a little bit of elaboration on the theme, there was a study done many years back, and by many I mean more than 20. But at that time, before all of what we know as corporate America really got into a full frothing lather, Cossack, at that point in time, the vast majority of civil rights suits filed in this country at the same time that the nascent right wing was screaming about all these dark-skinned people want to have special rights, the vast majority of civil rights suits filed in this country were and still are filed by corporations alleging that their civil rights have been violated.
Correct. Like, I've heard of several cases where corporations have hauled out their supposed Fourth Amendment rights against illegal search and seizure when they've been caught by, you know, either polluting or something else. They say, well, that's unfair because you.
Well, look at the recent
Fourth Amendment rights.
Look at the recent claim by AT&T. They got caught red-handed in something and took it all the way to the Supreme Court, claiming that they had a Fourth Amendment right against the undue search and seizure that protected them from having to disclose potentially damaging information. And that was one of those rare cases where the Supreme Court said, oh, no, you lose, goodbye.
Well, and if you'll remember, there was a case down here in Florida, further down south, which went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says, no, Fox News is not prevented from lying. What? They're not prevented from lying.
And that's one of those things that allows them to, because I mentioned it earlier, and I can't go away this Friday without driving this nail a little further. I'm sorry, Easter reference. Sean Hannity gave Bill Donahue a little boost yesterday after a new, you know, because remember the Catholic League is a fax machine, a computer, and Bill Donahue and probably some kiddie porn.
Right.
Because, you know, Bill Donahue being Bill Donahue. They've declared that, yeah, there's a war on Easter now. The war on Easter, according to, and again, this is all fabricated.
Of course.
As Think Progress noted, in his news release, Bill Donahue said, we don't make things up. And Think Progress said, well, actually he does. His evidence of a war on Easter. Yeah, got your pencil ready?
Yeah.
A filmmaker who claims to have found the nails used to crucify Jesus. Yeah, because the church already has those. They were sold them by a reputable man somewhere in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. Well, you know, 1,700 years ago. Time magazine featuring an evangelical Christian on the cover of a magazine. That's a war on Easter. A column written by an atheist British comedian, well, Ricky Gervais, and a song about Judas by Lady Gaga. Proof of the war on Easter, including the allegation that third graders at a Seattle school were told they must call Easter eggs spring spheres. Mother McCree.
That's insane. I'm surprised they didn't wet their pants over Life of Brian.
Oh, they did. That's another one of those movies that I went to as a teenager and was told promptly that I was going to hell for doing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I told you what happened in New Orleans when I went to see it, right?
Yeah.
I got hit with a sign saying Jesus loves you. I swear to God, you can't make this stuff up.
Careful, you almost made me huff cigar smoke.
I mean, these people are insane.
and vicious and mean, and let's not forget ignorant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're knuckle draggers. That goes without saying.
It's amazing. Hey, Cossack brother, I'm sorry I got to you so late. I got to roll, brother.
All right, take care.
Have a good weekend, my friend.
You too, sir.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Email rolling in from Jan and Jerry. Happy birthday, Agnes. Awesome year to you. Bob, wonderful show. Informative and supportive and very entertaining. Thanks for keeping us sane. You don't know how sane you keep me. Because you really do. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, is that your birthday?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I missed it. When did you announce it? Just a while ago.
I'm sorry, you're kind of breaking up, Tony.
I missed that. Did you announce it at the beginning of the show?
Yeah, I did.
So people in the chat can say happy birthday, or is she busy?
We kind of did that at the top of the show.
Darn, I missed it. Well, tell her I said happy birthday, okay?
See, that's what you get for being late to class.
Oh, sorry about that. I'll see you.
I'll tell her, Tony. No worries. Bye now. Tony calling from Vegas. And can we do one more? Oh, we could have if you were still there. Oh, well. So, you know, whatever you're celebrating, a happy one to you. Passover, Easter, Astarte, Eostra, something involving eggs and bunnies, or, as Bill Hicks said, goldfish and Lincoln logs in the sock drawer with the lead pipe in the billiard room. Just have fun. Because, you know, it's the difference between mythology and reality. Randall dropped me an email a little bit ago saying, science pertains to the natural world. Religion pertains to the supernatural world. And I understand that. And I don't entirely dismiss the supernatural world. It's just that it's not proven. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies. Sure, William, sure. Bill Shakespeare. I call him Bill. He calls me Bob. No, he doesn't. He's dead. And he stayed dead, just like everybody else who's ever died. They stay dead. But the thing is, there is magic in it all. I had that beautiful little moment when I got to explain to Ferg the other day that there are actually, because we talk about this stuff, he's kind of seeking within his world. And I explained to him, I said, son, me, you, everybody alive on the planet itself, we are made entirely of stuff that was right there, present right then, at the Big Bang. Bless his heart, he looked at me and he said, right, Dad, because the law of conservation of mass and energy says that matter and energy are neither created nor destroyed. I said, you got it. And all mythologies are merely mnemonics, avatars, if you will. For reaching into that which extends beyond our little physical manifestations and all our lives, as Willie who shook spears said, all our lives are rounded with a sleep. David in Tennessee noting, yeah, Bill stayed dead except through his art. Art is heaven. And Mark, thanks for the happy birthday wish to Agnes. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good holiday weekend. Monday night, special broadcast, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific. special broadcast, Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly, PRISM, West Virginia. Further discussions on the founding and creation of the Republic. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, who is always a willing help understanding the nexus between Christianity and its mother religion, and helpful in so many other ways. Thanks to our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, headonradionetwork.com. Go and read installment number 3 of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy if you haven't. Feel free to comment if you'd like. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch. Ben Birch is running a fundraiser at whiterosesociety.org. He's put a lot of his own pocket into keeping this stuff on the air. We try to help out as we can, but he's trying to raise $1,600 to cover the next few months because donations have become scarce.